You're now listening to Sound Talent Media. Check out more shows at soundtalentmedia.com.
You are about to participate in the most ambitious culinary experiment ever imagined.
This competition is going to test everything.
Adapt quickly to anything. I mean anything. The wildest day of your life starts right now.
All new 24 and 24 Last Chef Standing. Sunday night at 8 on Food Network. Stream on Max.
This is the Jabberjaw Podcast Network. Visit JabberjawMedia.com for more shows like this one.
Hello and welcome to episode 35 of the Managemental Podcast, a weekly discussion on hot topics in the music biz for the up-and-comers, the brand newbies, the beginners, and aspiring rock stars of tomorrow. Yes, the struggle is real, my friends, but let us help you uncover some of the mystery that is this challenging business of rock and roll. I am your host, Mr. Blasco, and I am excited to be here today. As always, I am joined by my good friend, the co-host from the other coast, a record label owner, fellow artist manager, and telekinesis expert, Mr. Mike Mowry. In the last episode, we took some questions from one of our loyal listeners who is also an aspiring manager. And Mike, he actually wrote us after listening to the episode, and he said this: "Hey Blasco, thanks for addressing my questions on episode 34 of Managemental. Great insights, advice as usual. I'll certainly keep focused on building the brand to get to the next level." Then he says, "Side note, following the Spotify playlist episode from a couple of weeks ago, I've been DMing playlist owners on Facebook and it's working. We've gotten tracks on a handful of rock playlists that collectively have over 5,000 followers. That is a killer tactic. Thanks, Zach." So how about that shit?
Dude, that's amazing. So everyone out there, you know, feel free to continue to send us what you're thinking, because it's fun for us to cover it, and hopefully you can get the same sort of insight and wisdom. And if you are implementing any of the things that we talk about on these episodes, we'd love to continue to hear from you guys. That's awesome, man.
Totally. And look, if you're a blossoming manager or just a band trying to figure out the digital age and Spotify playlist, man, go back and listen to that Spotify How to Get on Spotify playlist episodes, because it's like, if you look, don't take it from me, this guy followed the episode to a T, and he's been landing on playlist, and he's getting listeners of up to 5,000 people. So like, it works, you know, if you follow the steps according to Zach, our loyal listener. So rock on to that. This week I found a great article on Digital Music News written by our good friend Ari Herstand, titled 11 Things Millennial Musicians Just Don't Get. As usual, we will include all links to the author and the article in the show notes. This is going to be killer, so let's get mental. So, Mike, what's new in your world?
Oh, man, you know, it's one of these weeks. You know, we're recording the week of, you know, after Labor Day weekend, and I think we've said it before, but if not, you know, sometimes these short weeks, you know, you get the long weekend, which is nice. And of course, as managers and doing all the things that we do, you never truly are off, but you know, you're not on the hustle the same way that you are most days, you know, on the Monday. But it just comes back tenfold throughout the rest of the week. So, you know, here we are this week recording on Thursday. I, you know, just put up a new Tooth Grinder track. They premiered one on Metal Sucks today, and yesterday we premiered a new Good Tiger track, and so just a lot of stuff going on. Got bands starting tours today. It's just one of those things where September always comes in with a freaking bang, and this is absolutely no exception. I'm stoked about all the stuff that is going on. However, what about yourself?
Same old man, just, you know, got a bunch of records coming out in January, tours, same old stuff, man. Just like, you know, that it just, time just moves a lot faster, you know, like, but it felt like years ago, whenever something was 6 months away, it felt like, oh, we got plenty of time. Now something 6 months away is like so in your face, it's like not even funny.
Well, you know, that's an interesting point, and I don't know if you feel the, you know, I don't know if what you're saying is exactly what I'm about to say, but what I find is no matter how far out I try to start preparing for things, and I'm a planning guy. I'm a strategist. I always like to have, you know, the roadmap out and have my route planned. And of course, you know, we've got to be nimble and adjust on the fly as new information comes. But no matter how far in advance I plan that route, it always feels like the last minute is when every single thing gets done.
Yeah, I agree.
You know, and this week is no exception. We've got these two tracks, which I'm really excited about. You know, these are two bands. They're going into their sophomore records. You know, one's initials is GT and the other's is TG. But, you know, it's one of those things where here we came in, you know, Tuesday, and it was like, all right, we got to get every last thing in order. And we'd done some of the planning, but, you know, just making sure all the I's are dotted and T's are crossed. And, you know, inevitably, we were able to get everything together and had successful premieres, you know, again, for Good Tiger yesterday and Tooth Grinder today. But it is. That's why it sort of feels like you just get walloped with a baseball bat upside your head at the end of the day, because you're like, holy shit, that was a mad dash to ensure that, you know, everything got done the way that we wanted it to.
No doubt. Anyway, well, let's dig in. Number one, Spotify plays don't equal fans. I can't tell you how many artists I see on Spotify with hundreds of thousands or millions of streams, but can't even get 100 people out to their local or any shows, or get anyone to back their crowdfunding campaign or support them really in any way whatsoever. These listeners are not fans of the artist. They are fans of the playlist these songs got included on.
Yeah, I mean, I think that's an interesting point, and it's nice that we, you know, re-mentioned, you know, the Spotify episode that we did recently and talked about some of the strategies to get onto these playlists. I'm guessing if you really looked at what he's saying, you know, it's going to vary by genre for sure. But yeah, I mean, inevitably, if you end up on a bunch of playlists, you are going to get more streams than your fandom equals. I think a lot of the streaming services are still utilized for discovery and, you know, for people to casually listen in a way that, you know, is different than when you used to have to make that purchase. So I don't disagree with them, but I also just understand we're still in this transition and still in this flux trying to figure out exactly, you know, what it all means. You know, one of the tools that I'm looking at on each of the artists is, you know, the monthly listeners and the followers on their profile page, as opposed to just, okay, cool, you got one track with, you know, as he's saying, hundreds of thousands or millions of streams. What about yourself? What are you finding?
Yeah, I mean, look, it's a new business and a new world that we're living in, and you know, nothing is for sure. Like, you know, before we just used to put a record out and go on tour, and it was as simple as that, really. There's a lot more that's undetermined. Spotify is one of those things to where if it's working for you, great, then you should double down on it. And if you're not finding much success on it, that's okay too, because maybe that's going to be found somewhere else. But I think it's like in the previous episode, whenever we talked about this, and we kind of broke it down to where it used to be that fandom came first and you were a fan of the band and then you bought their record or you listened to them in some way or whatever. Now you can listen to them first on Spotify or wherever you stream, right? You can sample it, and if you like it, then you can become a fan. You can buy a t-shirt, you can buy a ticket. So the roles have kind of been reversed. So yeah, I see what he's saying or whatever, but I think the point here is like, just understand that a million streams only means something in terms of business whenever that is equating to sold out shows, t-shirt sales, independent downloads, et cetera, et cetera, right? So I think that's kind of what he's getting at. But number two, your branding and story is more important than your music. People judge you based on your aesthetic, story, and image long before they hit play on one of your songs, if they even make it that far. Your branding, which includes your image and your story, and really your overall aesthetic, are what non-musicians, aka bloggers, talk about. They ain't talking about your drum tones, syncopated rhythms, plugins, or mix techniques.
That's pretty hilarious. And again, I mean, I think he hits the nail on the head here. And of course, you know, you and I have worked with so many musicians that, you know, the stuff like drum tones and syncopated rhythms and plugins and mix techniques are very important to them. And I don't want to take anything away from those things for the artists who take pride in that stuff. But simultaneously, yes, all of the imagery has to go together. And, you know, this is an age old adage within the business, is you have to tell a story. What is unique about your band? What is the emotional, you know, what's pulling at the emotional heartstrings or mind strings to get somebody to want to dive into your music, you know? And when he says bloggers, he could also be talking about podcasters. And one of the things, you know, for myself that I find so intriguing, you know, I listen to a lot of podcasts, and many of them, you know, on Jabberjaw do a great job of interviewing other musicians. And there's times that I'll listen to an episode of a band that maybe I don't know if written off, but I just haven't really taken the time to check them out. I'll hear the interview, really like what the person being interviewed is saying, you know, that's their story, and then be much more compelled to go and check out the music. And, you know, I just think it's so interesting how often that happens in my life.
Yeah, I mean, for nothing else, just something to add here is that the business and the marketplace is very, very competitive now. We're dealing with a much more level playing field than we ever have before. So for nothing else, my suggestion is, regardless of what it is that you are, regardless of what your story or aesthetic is, you just need to be competitive. You need to be running parallel to what it is that you're trying to be, right? Like you're sonically and emotionally and aesthetically, you have to be in line with who your competition is. You at least have to be that good. Like if you're a deathcore band, then your demo or your songs or in your presentation has to be at the level of what the biggest deathcore band is, right? Like if you're not being competitive with what the top tier is in the genre that you want to be in, then you're going to get dismissed. I think that would be my addition to this.
Yeah, I would agree with that.
Number three, your follower numbers don't matter as much as your real life numbers. Don't tell me how many followers you have. All I care about are how many fans you have that are willing to support your career.
I mean, again, I think sometimes these articles are written in a way to kind of, what's the word? You know, just make an impact. And these statements are, of course, yes, your real life fans and people that are supporting you and coming to your shows and buying your merchandise and buying your music is what matters, especially if you're going to try to, you know, sustain yourself from it. That said, having high followers isn't a bad thing. And so, you know, it's definitely an indicator of whether or not people are paying attention to you, just like the Spotify plays, you know, and all of the other things. It's like, these aren't bad things to have. And usually one of them will lead to the other. It might not be, you know, exactly on a parallel path, but if you have a lot of followers and then you release, you know, great content, great music with a great image, that typically will translate into true fans. That's my take on it.
Numbers used to matter more than they do now. I think numbers are subjective because everybody knows that they can be bought and they can be hacked. So now the new buzzword is conversion. So if you have numbers, that's cool. But if you have no conversion, then the numbers are completely irrelevant. I'm just going to digress here and just give you an example. So there's a brand new band that is out that I've been following, and they're called The Fever 333. And it's the singer of Let Live and a few other guys that I don't really know or whatever. And it's their new project, whatever. But it's very interesting. And for anyone listening, I highly recommend everyone to go follow them and check them out. It's an interesting story. And yeah, maybe it's a little unfair that they're kind of a super group, but it's not like Let Live was like a huge band or whatever, right? So it's like, so, but just the way that they've reinvented themselves and how they're approaching this, it's like based on this article, there is a story there. Their conversion is such that the first show that they did was they rented a U-Haul, like a box truck, pulled up to Randy's Donuts near LAX and just played in the parking lot and tweeted like a couple hours before that they were going to be playing in the parking lot of Randy's Donuts. And a bunch of kids showed up and it ended up on YouTube, and it was a cool way to intro the band. Now, fast forward to last week, right? These guys do their first show. They charge $3.33 at the Roxy, which is a capacity of 500 people, and they sold it out. There was no opening bands. They played for like 40, 45 minutes or whatever. They sold it out. Every label, that the girl that programs Spotify rock playlist was there. Like, it was a who's who. Even Matt Pinfield was there. You know what I mean? Like it was a real thing. However, their numbers, they have like 20,000 followers on Instagram. Like, it's not some crazy thing. However, their conversion is such that they're building a buzz. They're selling out 500 cap rooms on their first show, and guaranteed they will have a record deal at way before the end of this year and stuff. So anyway, that was a long digress, but it's something that I saw with my own eyes as potentially something that you should be looking at and paying attention to, because it's the new way that these new bands are going to be doing things.
Yeah, that's a really cool story. And I'd seen some of that. I saw, you know, the show footage from outside of Randy's Donuts, which I thought was really cool. I hadn't caught on to the stuff that happened at the Roxy. I mean, it will be really curious to follow and see what does happen. Inevitably, they probably will get a deal, and it will be interesting to see if they can, you know, maintain the buzz, because as we both know, especially when you, you know, take a band like Let Live, and so many people really, you know, liked that singer. So in this infancy stage, you know, of the new act, of the new band, it doesn't surprise me that they're, you know, they're able to convert. And I'm hoping for them that they're able to convert over the long term. The question is, will that actually be the case? So that's going to be a fun one to follow in 2018.
No doubt. Number four, you don't have to follow musical trends to make it. Don't make music you think people want to hear. Make music that is meaningful to you. You can find your audience, or rather, the audience will find you if you market it properly.
Yeah, I mean, this is a no-brainer to me, and one that we've spoken about on previous episodes. You know, I've talked about artists like Carnifex and Ice Nine Kills that I've worked with, you know, and those are bands that have been around, both of them, a decade plus, who have, of course, they, you know, take influence from other bands in their genres and, of course, outside the genres, but, you know, they've really started to carve their own lane and continued to make music that is true to them. And they've tied that in with a consistent image and, you know, allowed their fans to really continue to gravitate and follow them. So this is a really interesting one. And, you know, it's challenging because it requires patience. And patience is you know, I mean, it's a virtue, I'm told. But it's so true that if you do what he's saying here by making music that's meaningful to you over the long run if it's good. And in fact, if it's great, you know, the rewards will follow.
Agreed. Number five, the goal is not to get signed. The goal is to make a living doing what you love. If your goal is to get signed, then you're going to miss. If after building your career on your own to a level where labels are begging to work with you, then and only then should you decide if it's the best move for you.
Again, these are one of those that I don't know exactly who this article is, you know, targeting. Genres are different and worlds are different, and bands at different stages in their careers are, of course, different. I think that this one at face value makes a ton of sense. You know, your goal shouldn't just be to get signed. We both have seen and talked about building leverage so you can get a deal that, you know, is fair to you and allows a label and their team to invest in you and hopefully, you know, be able to utilize their resources to get you, you know, more opportunities. But if the goal is just to get signed and thinking that a label or anyone is going to then just, you know, rub their magic fingers together and make opportunities happen, that's never going to work.
It's kind of funny in that I have I've got a band on a major label, and we're about to deliver the last record on the contract, you know, that we're contractually obligated to a certain amount of records, right? And we're about to put out that last one. And so now it becomes the time where we go, well, do we renegotiate with them, right? And continue to work with them? Or do we just, you know, figure out what our other options are, right? And so as I'm talking to the label, at this point, I'm going, guys, look, you're the label, and from what I understand, you'd like to keep the band, but this is our last record with you. So you're going to need to take some accountability as to what it is that you're offering a band in 2018, 2019, right? Because I don't need to be on a major label to not get on the radio. I don't need to be on a major label to not get on late night TV, right? I don't need a major label to get on Spotify. You know what I mean? Is there even going to be if let's just say that I put out another record 2019, 2020, is the conversation of needing a sales department to move pieces of plastic with music on it into big box retailers even a real conversation at that point? It's fucking insane. You know what I mean? And if you look at these like other bands or whatever, and we've gone over this subject multiple times of building your leverage, building your brand, building your value. And then you make a decision based on what the label can offer. But you look, man, in my opinion, by my observation, by and large, labels have a lot less to offer these days.
Yeah, I mean, I don't disagree. And earlier this morning, I was talking to, a guy that's in what I would now consider a legacy band, you know, within the scene or, you know, within the underground music community, and just catching up, shooting the shit. And he was talking about the same thing. You know, what is it that a label's going to do for me? But he was very cognizant of the fact that, you know, yes, if he wants to retain his own rights and figure out how to do it on his own, that means that he's got to actually do and string together all of those things, you know, on their own. When I worked with Periphery, you know, we licensed their, you know, we had deals in five different territories, and don't think for a minute that it wasn't me and my team, you know, of course, along with the band, that had to do so much of the, you know, the heavy lifting and coordination to ensure that every last licensing partner, because in a licensing deal, the label has a different obligation, you know, in a different relationship than as, you know, the signed label itself. So I think we're in these very interesting times. And what I'm finding and seeing is, you know, the ability to market a band, you know, is just as important as, you know, the ability to, like you said, distribute, get it into big box. You know, is late night TV even where you need to be headed nowadays? You know, I don't think so. I think we're seeing people on platforms like Spotify getting more attention and more streams than any of the impressions that they're getting from things like late night TV. I'm not saying that you shouldn't take late night TV if a major label can get that for you, but it's just not moving the needle the way that it once did.
Yep. Final number six. If all your eggs are in Instagram, you are doomed. Yes, Instagram is the hottest social app out right now. At one point, the only online presence that mattered for musicians was MySpace. Those that didn't grab their fans and transfer them to a database they owned, for example, email list, lost contact with all of their fans when MySpace died. Don't ignore the social sites where your fans exist, but also have a way to keep in touch with them that isn't dependent on the whims of the latest hot social app.
This is really strong advice, and it's actually incredibly hard to follow because it does take a lot of work to actually get, you know, them to convert and run over and sign up for something on an email list. But there are some strategists out there, you know, that really have a toolkit for people to follow, for bands to follow, to ensure that they are capturing people's emails. Because inevitably email does seem to be the thing that's going to stand, at least the, you know, forthcoming test of time. So I think that this is great advice. You know, just fair warning, it is a challenge to do. You know, we're all about trying to promote and engage. And the social platforms are the easiest places to do it. Just as a quick aside before, you know, you chime in with your opinion, I was having a conversation yesterday about the setup of a release. And we were talking about where we were going to spend our, you know, online marketing dollars. And I asked, you know, specifically about Instagram, and, you know, the label in question was saying, look, we do get that it's, you know, the hottest social app right now, but we're not seeing the return. We're not seeing the conversion from the dollar spent there as opposed to the dollar spent on, say, a Facebook ad or, you know, doing stuff through even YouTube. So,
yeah, an interesting side note. So I recently ran a poll on a band's Twitter account, and it was something along the lines of, if we have some, you know, groundbreaking hot news that you need to know about from this band, how would you like to hear about it? Like, by what platform would you like to hear about it, right? So we ran a poll, and the four options were, number one, email. Number two, website. Number three, social media sites. And then number four, texting, right? So as a somewhat of a revelation, dead last, the website. Kids do not give a fuck about going to a website. The interesting part is second to dead last, emails. Because these younger kids, and I don't know what it is about the aversion to email, but like these kids, man, they're just not like, they just don't get it. Like, oh, I don't check email. Like, I don't do email. And it's like, to me, it's such a head scratcher in that, but it's on the same device. It's like, it's technically almost the same as texting. You know what I mean? Like it's just such a fucking like weird fucking dynamic to me. Anyway, but then, 30% of the vote was texting, and then the grand winner was social media. So obviously, keep to the social media. No one's saying that. But as a potential option addition here is maybe something to consider if your demo is appropriate for it. Look into options for text marketing. And maybe instead of acquiring email addresses, you should be acquiring phone numbers. Just throwing that out there.
Yeah, I mean, that's fantastic advice. And I think, you know, even on my end, texting cuts through the clutter in a different way. And I think it's because you don't get, or I don't get, a ton of notifications from people. You know, my research, which it's been a little while since I've done any research on it, but it's that, you know, those texting, you know, options typically are much more expensive than, you know, being able to send out an email list. Now, of course, you've got to spend some time and figure out, okay, you know, you can send out a ton of emails, but are you getting any return? I do know Warped Tour did a good job of sending text updates throughout the summer, and you know, they also send emails, and I looked at both of them, but texts, you know, that was something that popped up and it wasn't cluttered with all of the other, you know, you and I get hundreds of emails every single day. So it's cool that, you know, this is what I love about the fact that you and I each have our experiences and are able to share these real life examples. That's awesome that you did that poll. And I think, you know, the demographic, really does play a role in that. So thanks for doing that.
Absolutely. Well, that concludes episode 35. Thanks to everyone for tuning in. We will be back here next week. In the meantime, you can find me on Twitter and Instagram at Lasco1313. We encourage you to email us any questions or comments you may have for the podcast to me directly at asklasco@gmail.com. Because, hey, people, we do this show for you. Consider it a tool for understanding this ever so challenging and confusing business of music. If you have listened this far, much respect to you for making efforts to educate yourselves and taking your future into your own hands. Mike, any final parting thoughts?
And you can follow me on Twitter and Instagram at MikeOloop. Lots of exciting things happening in the month of September and for the rest of the year. So don't hesitate to throw a follow there and see what we're up to. As always, I'll remind you that thanks for listening. And if you're so inclined, we would appreciate you rating and reviewing this podcast wherever you are doing so. Whether it be the iTunes Store, SoundCloud, or anywhere else for that matter. And other than that, thanks again. I can't believe we're 35 episodes deep, but it's always exciting and looking forward to connecting once again next week. Thanks a lot, guys.
Thanks, everybody.
Peace.
This is the Jabberjaw Podcast Network.
I don't think it overstates things to say that the Beatles were the greatest gift to entertainment and culture of our time, a secular religion, if you will, with their universal appeal and demonstrable impact on people's lives. I'm Robert Rodriguez, host of Something About the Beatles. With every episode, I speak with historians, musicians, artists, and Beatle witnesses, all in the service of fresh insights into the most joyous cultural entity the world has ever known. I hope you'll join me and listen to Something About the Beatles, now on Evergreen and wherever you get your podcasts.